Whether your beer is in a bottle, can, or glass, kick back and relax. It's Better on Draft.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 338 of the Better on Draft podcast. My name is Ken. Thank you so much for joining us. I truly appreciate it. It is the final episode of the year. Hopefully, we're all going out with a bang. Hopefully, Santa Claus was good to all of us. Let's start and see what everybody is drinking, starting with Rob. Rob, what do you got?
I have Rebel Kent from Three Sheeps, a nice amber ale.
Where's Three Sheets out of?
Three Sheeps is out of, I think they're out of Madison. They're definitely out of Wisconsin.
And Daniel, what do you got?
I have got myself one of my favorites, the good old Speedway Stout.
Just a regular ass Speedway Stout today?
Yep, just a regular ass Speedway.
Perfect. And Wendy, what do you got?
I am in a Nashville mood, apparently, because I have a Fresh on Fresh from Bearded Iris. I don't know why I can't figure out my camera anymore. And I'm going to follow that up with a Southern Grist Brocco Mango Brocco Nut. It is a mango coconut brown.
Okay.
I think. We'll see when I pour it out.
Sorry. Ken's muted.
It is episode 337 and not 338. Just so you are aware, I am drinking a Dragon's Milk, just the regular plain old Dragon's Milk, and I'm going to be following that up with another Dragon's Milk.
Dragon's Milks.
Ken's going to get one tonight.
I am, that's for sure. I had the opportunity when I went to Total Wine last week. So after the show, I actually cashed my keg of Bell's Amber. And so I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to go to Total Wine on Saturday. And my choices were very, very limited for keg choices. When I went there, it was basically like Two Hearted. It was All Day, Shorts Local. And then the other two, there was M43 there as well. But there was like Dragon's Milk. And I'm like, well, that's going to be way too dangerous to have that on draft at home at my leisure.
I would know.
And so here's where Dan will make sure to remind everyone that I love IPAs. I actually got a keg of
B43. Nice.
Oh, God.
I know.
Why would you do that?
I like the B43.
Pull them over to the happy side.
I don't know. That's really too. B43 is a lot more dry than hoppy. It is definitely one of the only tolerable New England IPAs that I can manage to drink, but it's also a keto beer. So should I start trying to get into keto again at the beginning of the year, I can drink that and not feel too guilty because the amount of carbs in it is comparable to like a Miller Lite. And the ABV is a lot higher too. So I am very, very excited for it. Dan, I know I've disappointed you.
Should have went with the Dragon's Milk, man. I don't know what you're doing.
So I want to start the show with not necessarily a New Year's resolution, but I want people to maybe understand a little bit more of how we address beers, how we look at beers, and more importantly, how we rate beers. Should we still rate them anymore? Why do we continue or don't continue? So I want to kind of go over all of our theories when it comes to craft beer. Now, myself, I have not used Untappd, not for Better on Draft, in probably a good 5 to 6 years. It was fun to kind of check in everything and see all the beers that I had, especially on those long trips. I think at one point we were even looking at doing just like a gimmicky Untappd channel where we were going to try to do 1,000 beers in 1 year, like just try 1,000 different beers. Needless to say, one, I think that kind of shows the amount of craft beer that's available and out there, because you can easily pull that off just by going to Michigan breweries all the time, and you could get a good head start just by going to Dragon Mead and getting 50 right there. But when you are, for example, let's start off with beer festivals. Do you feel that your couple ounce pour as you're getting beer after beer is a good rating for the beer itself when you go to Untappd or Beer Advocate or Rate Beer? Or do you think that it's better just to check it in to say you had it, maybe a few notes if you liked it, utilizing Untappd? and move forward. I'm going to start with Rob on this one. I want to get his thoughts.
Okay. So I'm actually a moderator on Untapped. So I do use the app a little bit. But as to at a beer festival, it's funny you should ask at that one specifically. So one of the groups I'm in, every February, we do a game we call Drinking the Alphabet. So there's 28 days in February. Usually there's 29 this year, but, there's 28 days in February. Usually there's 26 letters in the alphabet. And then we do one day for a number and one day for a symbol. So you have to drink beers and check in beers that start with each of the letters of the alphabet. And the first year we did this, February 2nd happened to be the year of Winterfest, a huge beer festival, in Indiana. And so there's like 90 breweries that show up to this thing, and there's just tons of beer to have. And I drank all the way through the letter Z on that one day because of the tasters and checking it at the festival. As to whether it's good ratings or not, I usually stop rating after I've had a few, just because I know that my palate's wrecked. There's no way I'm tasting what I should be tasting in these beers. And lucky to stay upright and all that too. So yeah, I do eventually stop rating, but I do like to know. So if it's a brewery, for example, that I hadn't had before, which are my favorite ones to visit at these things, then I like to leave myself a note on the beer that I have, whether it's about the beer or the brewery itself, because it's easy to go back and kind of find that again. And then just see and remember, you know, oh yeah, I did want to go to this brewery, or this beer tasted really off, even if I was a little drunk when I had it, I maybe don't want to go to this brewery. So that's about how I use Untappd now, even if I'm not at a festival trying to drink the alphabet.
What about you, Wendy?
I am pretty much the same way. I like to check in my beers so that I can remember that I had it. I'm also really set because I forget to check in beers so often. On getting to the next level of the beer, I don't remember what it's called, but it's like 5,000 beers. I think 7,000 is the one I have to get to now. I'm not 100% sure which one it is. And I'm like 700 away, but I forget to check in beers all the time. But I stopped rating them because even though I know how to rate a beer, I can taste a beer that might not be to my style, be to something that I like and know that it's good to style. But most people on Untappd don't know that. They don't know how to do that. They don't understand what that means. They're rating the beer based on whether they like it or whether they don't like it. So I don't want to put that out there for them. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And then there's some styles where you know they're going to be rated higher than they honestly should be, just because right. of all the beer bros who love that style and love those beers and, exactly. and what have you. Yeah. Whereas the poor lowly Browns, they all get these horrible ratings, even though they're made well.
Well, look at what Ratebeer does. Ratebeer is the kind of site that has like the general rating and then the rating for the style, which is like adjusted for inflation or whatever you want to call it, like adjusted for poor ratings. Like, this is where when somebody comes along and says, this is the best Pilsner I ever had, and they rate it like 4 out of 5. And I'm like, what would you need to get a 5 out of 5? But it's obviously you would need it to not be a Pilsner.
True. Now, I will say, if I rate something on Untappd, if I put a 5 on there, it is because I want to remember to tell the people in our organization that this was an amazing beer I had. I want to share that with you so that then they can go and review the beer and do an actual full review on it. Or it's for whenever we go to Beer Fest that we're always asked for our top picks. That's what when I rate a beer is so that I can go back and look and see, oh, that's the one I wanted to talk to you about.
What about you, Dan?
Yeah, so I actually have a good example for this that I was thinking of all. And I'm very similar to Rob and Wendy here. There's no way in a 1 to 2 ounce pour that you can, you know, get a good feel for it and rate the beer. The example I have actually this year is at GABF. I tried the Alaskan Smoked Porter, 1 ounce sample was great. About a month later here, had a pint of it on tap, struggled to get through the whole thing. So while that 1 ounce was great, when you're getting to the bottom of a 16 ounce glass, that smoke started to overwhelm, making it tough to drink. There's no way I could have done more than one. So I think if anyone's rating off of 1 ounce, they're really not giving, you know, a proper rating. There's no way you can tell the characteristics or how a beer is just off that small sample size.
It doesn't give it time to warm up either.
No. So you're drinking this, it's literally one sip. So once you're done with that, I mean, there's no way to tell how it's going to change. Like, for example, especially a stout, you don't want to have ice cold. Use that as a perfect example. So there's just no way to judge it.
I agree.
I think for me, especially if you're having a beer that is at a bar as opposed to a brewery, you know, how many times have we gone to a bar where you can obviously tell that their lines haven't been clean or they haven't taken care of it, or God forbid, it's that bowling alley I go to where the Alaskan Amber was on draft for a good year and a half before it got separated or changed into something else. I think there's a lot of factors that go into it where obviously breweries are going to want to know if you find, you know, bad lines somewhere. So, you know, mentioning it to them is a good thing. But I think in this day and age, there are too many people who believe in their own shit too much when they shouldn't at all. I can on purpose tell you, like, any rating system is going to be a personal preference and it's not going to be a general wide rating. And I'm not going to be able to rate something fairly just because I'm not a BJCP judge. I don't know how to tell the differences in between one flavor profile or another. The only thing that I can tell you is if your beer's infected or your beer shouldn't be tasting, you know, if I'm tasting sour apple, I know I shouldn't be tasting that in the first place. So I just don't see, and this is what I'll lay back to you guys, is rating beer good for the community, good for everybody? Rob, you might want to plead the fifth because you're a moderator of a rating app, but like, is it worth it anymore, like, to have a numbering rating system?
So to a couple of points I want to address there. One, the BJCP part, where they're judging according to style guidelines. And I guess technically a beer made technically correct should taste good, but that's not what they're judging. They're judging if it's made to the style guidelines. So that's different from what breweries are generally producing. If breweries are producing for a competition, that's one thing, but generally they're producing to make something that sells. So they don't really care if they're two style or any of that. So trying to put the two together as a way of fairly rating is going to be a difficult task. And then, you know, the styles are made up anyway. So there's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of, like, what's the difference between a porter and a stout? So it's not really a great guidance there. And as to the number part, I think that it's a wisdom of crowds game that they're going for, or some idea of that. But our crowd is all rating everything too high anyway.
Wendy or Dan?
Yeah, so I think it's stupid. We've talked about this going back to 2015. Because you're always going to have people who don't like the style of beer rating at one or a quarter star, whatever ridiculous rating you could do. A rating really should be just a personal thing. I don't think it should affect the beer, you know, overall, but if you're rating it, it should be for yourself. So you can see how you've rated beers in the past and what you think about it. This whole thing, you know, Rob mentioned the beer bros, I think it was you, Rob, that mentioned that are going to rate a specific beer, aka IPA, way too high because it's all they drink. It just ruins it. It doesn't really give you, these ratings don't help you figure out what's good in any way.
I think that's honestly, as we have on our page. If you're not watching the video live, obviously you can watch us live over at twitch.tv/betteron draft or even youtube.com/betteron draft. And we do interact with our guests, including Godzilla. I was saying that they use Untappd as a personal rate on a specific beer. And I think you can go over Untappd. You can file on Untappd and say you drink a beer without actually rating the beer. So that's, once I realized that, like, it made Untappd a little bit nicer for me to want to use in the first place, because now I'm at least just putting my notes in there. Because at one point I was like, you know, oh, I'll rate a 5 if I like it, a 3 if I want to try it again, or like, I don't rate it if I don't, you know, like it. But even that 3 out of 5 can hurt a brewery, especially when you're dealing with organizations like Tavor, which has to be a certain rating on Untappd just to move forward. But when you go into like Pilsner Urquell on Untappd, which is obviously the Pilsner in the world, and you see the rating, you're like, how is this not a top tier beer? And it's just because it's not one of those styles. But Wendy, what about you?
I agree with what everyone's saying. I do think that it can be helpful to the breweries because they can see what people are necessarily liking or not liking, even if it's not 100% because they're following the trends. At least you can look at the trends by looking at what people are rating, even if they're not. Again, I don't like to rate stuff just because, like Dan was saying, he likes to use it as a personal rating to remind himself. I was doing that for a while too, and I've gone back and looked at stuff and I was like, why did I rate that high? Or why did I rate it that low? You know, there's been things that I posted that I'm like, well, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. And sometimes you're just in a great place, like socially or whatever. And so everything's going to taste so much better.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
and you brought up the fact at the beginning of the conversation, like, how many beers have you had that night? What did you eat? Where are you? Are you at a party? Are you at, you know, some type of a funeral? Like, you're at a wake and you're drinking a beer? Like,
yeah, I will say, so as far as ratings, I won't use it to choose a beer like on shelves, but I will look at the comments that people have left, and those are pretty sparse. But some people actually leave tasting notes of some sort in their comments. Sometimes it's like, hey, Beth, I found this, or something like that, but which isn't helpful. But occasionally you can find some things in there that explain either what they were thinking when they were drinking it, or, you know, how it felt.
Yeah, but isn't it better off to just message the brewery directly if you have some type of issue than putting them on blast on Untappd or Facebook or whatever?
Yeah, not so much I don't want to see that, and who knows what kind of grudges people out there have, and they always take it to the socials as, you know, over the top as they possibly can. right Ken? but if I see you know, people leaving happy little notes on the thing, you know, like, we've just stumbled across this beer at a bar and really enjoyed it and got a second one, especially if I see that they ordered a second one, then there's a good chance I'll try that one.
Listen, I've tried to bury the hatchet with that dude on Dacky that despises me. And he has no interest in it, and there's nothing much more I can do other than put the offer.
So I do have one more thing to say about Untappd that I found it really useful this past season for the Advent calendar, because I did the Costco Advent calendar, and I posted about every single beer every day during Advent on TikTok. And you can only talk about a Helles so much. So I started researching the breweries and that particular beer. And I found Untappd very useful for that. I would start with Untappd, then I would go to Beer Advocate, and then I would go to the brewery website, which was almost 99% of the time in German. And only sometimes was it translatable by Google. I now have German speaking people on my TikTok coming through. So I've somehow managed to make it on German TikTok just by doing the Advent calendar.
It's awesome. So the other thing that I like Untappd for is when I'm in some strange city that I've never been to before, and you just open up that map and you see what breweries or what beer venues are nearby, get an idea of what's in the area.
I mean, Google's good for that too.
Yeah.
Probably even better.
Untappd will sometimes have a tap list, and sometimes you can get a badge.
Oh yeah, if they have the menus, that I agree with. You are right on that. But yeah, I never thought to open a different, you know, app just to try and find the location of something. It just feels like an extra step. But that's a good point if y'all need your badges. So
that's right.
Better on Draft is made possible thanks to our sponsor, North Center Brewing in Northville, Michigan. Open Tuesday to Sunday, North Center provides a fun atmosphere with amazing beer. Try their Bobby English while playing shuffleboard, or wash down their classic Reuben sandwich with a glass of painkiller. Find them online at northcenterbrewing.com. Better on Draft is sponsored by Zatuna Liquor. Located on Rochester Road in Rochester Hills, go visit Jack and see why he is known as one of the best beer and bourbon stores in the state. A large variety of singles, wine, booze, and snacks, Zatuna Liquor is your one-stop shop before a party. Better on Draft is sponsored by Craft Tapped. Currently located in 11 states, including Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, Craft Tapped is a monthly subscription that pays for itself after just one visit to your local brewery. Use the code BOD at checkout and receive 15% to any membership, not just for Michigan fans. For Michigan fans, get 50% off your first two pints at each venue you go to, including Better on Draft-sponsored North Center Brewing and 2022 March Draftness winner Copper Hop in St. Clair Shores.
I don't think I've ever, prior to us building the original Michigan Brewery Map app on Google, Untappd was great for that, as well as Rex Halfpenny's Michigan Beer Guide to find all the breweries in the state. But yeah, I don't think you can beat what Google technically has to offer, because if you can't find a brewery, especially a brewery nearby, you might be able just to find a nice beer bar or something like that. And sure, all that's on Untappd. But I think just Google kind of is always updated. And I use the Is It Busy feature way too often to decide if I'm going to go somewhere or not. Like if it says
that thing doesn't work well, at least places I've been to.
Yeah. I follow it blindly. I haven't had an issue following it blindly, so I'll just take that for what it is.
I do some traveling, and there's been a few times that Google told me a brewery was open and I got there and they were not, which is fine if they're not in the middle of nowhere or the middle of an industrial park on a, you know, Wednesday afternoon when there's no Ubers around.
Yeah, that's always a hard thing too. I remember when planning my our trip with Dan, when Dan and I went to San Antonio and Austin, and figuring out what times places were open and when we could get there, because it's the middle of the week, so you can't just go everywhere. Especially like in Michigan, most places are at least open Wednesday through Sunday. Whereas in Texas, like some places weren't even open Wednesdays and Thursdays. They're like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday type place. So those are always good. It's always best though when you're traveling, like Wendy does, or when, you know, I think all of us do, when you're planning that, you have to check the hours. It is just impeccable, like a must when you're traveling throughout the country.
I'm laughing here because it happened to me in South Africa. And it was just a day that I had to myself, and kind of, I had no real schedule or itinerary, and I checked the app and there was a brewery. So I took an Uber to the brewery and the brewery was not there anymore.
Oh, geez.
So the Uber very nicely, you know, dropped me off and took me to my next destination, which was a beer bar that did exist. So it all ended up working out okay. But
oh, I've had them leave me there before. Sorry, I have another fare to go pick up. So they would leave. I'm like, okay. I'll wait 45 minutes here in this industrial park with nobody else around for the next Uber to be available.
I would have just changed the address. You can change the address before ending the ride, unless he already ended it on you.
So yeah, we pretty much ran out of road. Like, we were looking for this place. We pretty much ran out of road and said it's not here.
Well, I mean, the three of you are fairly world well traveled. What are some of your favorite places you've hit outside of the U.S. or maybe in a more remote part of the U.S. that you've enjoyed going to over the last few years or 5 years, whatever? Dan, why don't you start? You're the one that's been randomly going to other countries.
I'll pass on me because I'm trying to think because I've got a lot of places I was running through my head. Come back to me.
All right, we'll go back to you. Wendy.
I have not been to a lot of foreign countries. I've done a lot of U.S. travel, with the exception of Caribbean islands. So I enjoy going to all the breweries in the Caribbean islands. It's a lot of light lagers, but every now and then you find a stout. You find some really awesome places, and the people are amazing. So I think my favorite would have been the Dutch side of St. Martin. I had a really good time there. The owner at one brewery actually drove me to the next brewery.
Oh, wow.
So that was pretty cool. yeah, I have a lot of stories about Caribbean islands. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, I'm only going to tell the first half of this one. I could maybe do the second half another time. But so I was in Thailand for 2 weeks working on a project, which meant I got the weekend to myself, which was kind of great. And it turned out there was a bank holiday right there smack dab in the middle of that, too. So I got a 3-day weekend that I wasn't expecting. And one of the guys I was working with found out that I brewed beer. And he said, oh, I'm learning how to brew beer. I'm learning it over at this brewery. You should come meet me there. So we set it up to meet there. And to get there, you take an Uber to, I can't even remember what it was. It was basically a few blocks away from a train station. And so you get off there and then you have to take a water taxi to this island. And the water taxi, after I did the conversion, I think it cost about 5 US cents to take this taxi over to the island where there are no cars and, you know, just footpaths and stuff. There's a big a Watt out there. But then it's a lot of shopping and stuff. And out on this island is a place called Chit Beer. and it's run by two brothers named Chit. He started the business. He actually went to school in the U.S. and then he has set up a bunch of breweries in Southeast Asia. Like he runs basically a school out of this brewery. So all these home brewers come out there and they brew stuff, and then they come out in like a week and their beers are on tap. So but his brother Porn is the head brewer of this.
Wait, what's his name?
It is Porn, which means blessed time.
So you've got Shit and Porn?
Yeah, Shit and Porn.
Okay.
It's absolutely wonderful. Right? So I'm there and I'm having a great time. And as the night goes on, they start ringing this bell. And each time they do, it's because a keg kicked. And so one of the students' beers gets put on tap. And the student comes up and says something in Thai. So I have no idea what he actually says, but then we all get to try the beer and, you know, we're killing kegs left and right all night long, just having a wonderful time. It's absolutely great. And I ended up closing the place down and the owner Chit, he put me on like the boat that is reserved for the business people of the island to get me off because the water taxis had stopped running.
Oh boy. What's the second half of the story?
Yeah,
does it involve ladyboys or something?
No,
like
it
that?
Does not. No, it does not. It's not that racy, but yeah.
I've never been to Thailand and I was just trying to look and see, and you know, when we talk about beer laws, apparently it's illegal to homebrew in Thailand.
Yes.
That's my guess is why a lot of people go to Chit Brewing to brew their beer, because it's at a legal spot, you might say.
So there's a lot of stuff that he's doing. You can look up Chit Beer on the internet and it'll talk about this stuff, but he's breaking a bunch of laws over there and just pays the fines.
I like that.
And so, yeah, that's basically how he runs his business.
What do they say? It's only illegal if you can't afford the fine.
Yeah, that's how it works.
I figured he was out on this island because it got around some of the taxation laws and you know, brewing laws and all that stuff. But no, it doesn't seem like he gets around that at all.
Well, Dan, we gave you some time.
Yeah, so I narrowed it down to two that I was thinking about. One is in the U.S., and it's a place called Big Island Brew House on the north shore of the Big Island of Hawaii, kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's a really interesting place. But they probably have one of the best beers in Hawaii. It's the spear. And I gave them crap about the name, too, when I talked to one of the owners. They called it Odin's Sword. It's a barrel-aged stout or porter. I can't remember which one. One of the few, probably the only barrel-aged beer on that island. But everyone knows, if you know anything, Odin doesn't use a sword. He uses a spear. So had to give him crap about that. They said it wasn't the first time they've heard about it. The other would be Altitude Brewing down on the South Island in Queenstown in New Zealand. I think what really set that one apart is the setting. Just it's at the base of a really big mountain and lake, so it's got a really nice view. And they do some unique beers there. The one that really caught my attention, you know, as I was talking about smoke beers earlier, was a peat smoked stout. So I know people, I don't know, Ken, you like whiskey. I don't know if you like scotch. But it gives a unique flavor versus, you know, like that liquid smoke flavor you get with a lot of beers. They used actual peat to smoke it. So it gave a really good peaty flavor that you could actually, with this one, drink a few of.
I do not like scotch at all. Bourbon, whiskey are basically my go-tos in that realm of things. Scotch, I've tried a handful. Nothing really gets me, so I just don't bother trying anymore, especially because of how expensive that hobby can get to drinking yeah. Scotch. I'm good enough with my little bottles of whiskey that I always have here. I actually just cracked, I had a friend over a few nights ago, and we cracked open. I had from my Japanese whiskey advent calendar, which I'm pretty sure I got in 2019 or 2020. I still had two left. One was a Hibiki 17, which that 1 ounce is about a $50 bar pour. So I opened that up for a friend who came over. I still got Yamazaki 12, which I think is right above where my thumb is, next to the big K behind me on the video if you are watching. For me, however, I haven't necessarily been too much out of the country. The furthest I've gone is like Toronto. Which, I mean, Canada is just basically like an extension of America for the most part.
Don't tell them that.
No. I would never tell that to them to their face. But I think for me, one of the best spots, and I think it's a very, very well hidden area within like U.S. craft beer, and basically Bentonville, Arkansas. They have such a nice little area of beers. Plus, I believe that's where, well, Coors there. I believe Ozark is there. It's a nice little area right next to, because Bentonville's right on the border of Oklahoma, basically, a couple miles away. So you get the opportunity to, one, be near two states in case you're looking for other beers. But two, it's kind of off the beaten path compared to where everyone else wants to go when it comes to craft beer destinations, or Asheville, Portland, Seattle, Grand Rapids.
There's two huge employers in Bentonville that hire consultants, of which I am one. So I've been down there. There's also a dry county down there. Well, there was last time I was down there anyway.
I don't think I ran into any issues with a dry county. I always get confused when I go to Texas, because like the laws in Grapevine, Texas are a lot different than like what a typical dry county is, but it's considered a dry county, so you can't typically buy booze anywhere, like spirits. You can only buy beer and wine. Random blue laws that you just run into throughout the entire state. It's the same thing when I went to Baltimore one day, and like you couldn't buy to-go beer anywhere, but you could drink anywhere you wanted to, and everything was open. And I'm like, oh, I guess I'm drinking at the bar today because I can't buy anything to take back to my hotel room.
So where my parents are at in Alabama, my dad was looking for something to put in his drink. And my mom's always like Christian Brothers brandy. So they went to the only store that you could buy liquor at in the whole area. And the $30 bottle of Christian Brothers brandy costs $75. because there's only one store that you can buy it at. So it's not really a dry county, but they sure got a lockdown on it.
That's not a government-owned store, is it?
I don't think so. I didn't really look a whole lot into it. He told me that after because he was looking for something for them for Christmas, so I had already left. There were a lot of sneaky good breweries in Birmingham, though. I had some pretty good beer while I was there.
Have either of you, Rob and Dan, been to Birmingham at all or like that at Southern State area?
I have not. Talk about the former Confederate area. I have not. Yeah. I've been to Florida, been to Atlanta, or been to Georgia. And I stay out of Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana. I stay out of there.
I can't remember if I was in Birmingham. I was in that area, but it was just a 3-day project. So it really did not stick in my head at all.
Louisiana, I think Lafayette, the casinos over there, still give you free beer and free drinks if you're gambling. So,
oh, there we go.
I went to, I think it's Lafayette. I knew I flew into Houston and I had to drive out there. And I remember I showed up to the Golden Nugget over there and started playing blackjack and got like my first beer was free. I'm like, oh, okay. I know how this night's going. I might need to be getting a second hotel where I am.
I've done a few vacations down in the Floribama area, and that's pretty nice. There's even a Floribama right on the border that you can drink at. That's a pretty good place. It's just then you got to drive away from it because there's nothing else there.
All right. As we continue the show and kind of talking about things that are going on, we've talked a little bit about Untappd earlier. We talked about how we rate beers. But I want to get your guys' thoughts on what you will see in 2024. Is there going to be a style that you think is going to be a top tier style? Do you think we're going to have a correction when it comes to breweries opening or closing due to the final lingering effects of COVID and PPP? What are your predictions for the year 2024? I'll start with one and then we'll kind of go through and talk with everyone else and see what their thoughts are. Folks, if you're listening live over on Twitch or Kick or YouTube, Facebook, wherever, feel free to put it in the chat what some of your predictions are, what you think of some of our predictions, as of course, at Better on Draft on all those. With that in mind, I think one of the big things we are going to start to see is I think 2024 is going to be the first year in a long time where we're going to have more closings than openings in breweries. I don't think there's naturally a specific reason. I don't think it's an economical reason. I think that it is going to be more... One, PPP saved a lot of breweries that shouldn't have been saved, or wouldn't have been saved, I should say, based on the quality of their beer, their business savviness. I think a lot of places are going to feel that pain next year as people start to continue choosing where they're going to spend their money. And I think 2024 is going to be the year of where we finally get smaller packaging options. But what I mean by that is more either smaller cans, so 16 ounces is going to downgrade to 12 ounce, or more singles, 19.2s in cans. So we're going to see either smaller can options in 4 and 6 packs or larger can singles that are going to be distributed where you don't have to buy an entire 6-pack like Voodoo Ranger, Two Hearted here in Michigan. Now they're the same company, so it doesn't, you know, it kind of fits the bill. But what are your predictions? And I kind of want to go to Rob first, because now that I know he's an Untappd moderator.
see how proud I am of that, right?
do you see trends when you're in Untappd of things like, did you see when milkshake IPAs were starting to rise or cold IPAs or whatever? Like, do you see this before everyone else kind of sees it?
I don't know about before everyone else. So kind of. The way being a moderator works in Untappd, we have a moderation queue. So I subscribe to Indiana. We have a very active moderator in Indiana who keeps our queue extremely clean. So I don't see as much as I probably would in another state. But we will see a lot of like new beers being created of particular styles. And I will give you an example of that would be 450 North. And I don't know if you remember when 450 North's XXLs had their ABVs actually tested and they were lower than just the normal slushies. And it made a lot of people really mad. And basically all of their beers got locked and untapped for ABV edits. And then every time they came out with a new XXL slushy, they had run it through, they worked with Sun King. They had run it through an actual testing. And so we had to two decimal places what the actual ABV of the beer was. But I saw that happening in the moderation queues and everywhere. And yeah, that one was kind of it was a mess. But it wasn't a prediction of what was happening out there in the world. Instead, what you see is lots of new beers being created and people not knowing which styles to pick. So because, you know, that, what was it? Cold IPAs. That was a more recent one, right? Cold IPA wasn't a thing. And so people would say, well, it's an IPA, but there's nothing here for cold IPA. So I haven't noticed anything like that right now. So I haven't been looking too closely, but I haven't noticed anything like that yet.
Then what about you? What's your thoughts on what a 2024 will bring us?
I think that's going to be the rise of the cold IPA. I'm not sure. I think so. Every year is the year of the lager, right? Always has been. But we might see lagers actually get some love again this year. I feel like they got some love a couple of years ago. Maybe it was trending like right as COVID was hitting, that there were more breweries that seemed to be doing lagers. But I'd like to see some of those lagers or lager styles come back or get more popular, even if they're done with ale yeast. It doesn't really matter so much, but like a Schwarz beer or, you know, some of the, some Rausch beer. I'd love some Rausch beers and things like that, but like all sorts of the darker lagers that just are underrepresented.
Wendy, what's your predictions for the year?
First of all, Creature Comfort has a Mexican dark lager called Change Your Address that is amazing. It was so good. I brought a 4-pack home and I'm already disappointed that I didn't get more. My prediction for the year, I unfortunately, and I hate to say this because it is not my favorite style, but I think we're going to see West Coast IPAs come back. I'm just starting to see them more everywhere I go, and it was really nice for a little while because when I picked an IPA, I didn't have to ask if it was a West Coast style, but now we're starting to see more of them again, which really disappoints me. What I want to see happen is more Belgian styles. We don't see enough triples, doubles, quads at all. And we need those.
You guys don't get Taxman up there, right?
No,
we do not.
Okay. Yeah, okay. They distribute widely in Indiana, but that's kind of their wheelhouse.
The Belgian style. That's actually style. One of my bucket lists.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a few breweries in Michigan, and I'm sure each state has a few that do like Belgian styles, German styles, fairly well and fairly consistently, but there's no distribution. So when you're looking for like a Belgian triple, if you could find like Dragon Mead Final Absolution, that's great. But that's Fat Tires triple, which isn't too bad. Unibrew,
New Belgium,
New Holland,
New Holland Fat Tires, same in like company. It's all the same now.
You mean New Belgium?
New Belgium, not New Holland.
Did I say New Holland? Yeah.
They would not take kindly to that. Just enough Canada and New Holland.
There you go. Like I actually picked up some Allagash triple, and by put in an online order on Binny's and had a friend pick it up when they were driving back to Michigan.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, there's a decent good amount of beer there because I could get stuff for, you know, MSRP or less. So this is my Knob Creek Bourbon County, I don't know, 30th anniversary. Was that last year? Yep.
What would we do without our beer friends, man?
Yeah. I mean, they had a deal with trying to find parking at a place in Chicago. So they did a lot for me. Did everyone give their predictions, Dan?
No. So you actually said the similar thing to what I was thinking. I think we are going to see a lot of brewery closures. I remember we talked back during the pandemic. We were surprised more didn't close. I think we lost two here in Arizona during the whole thing. And there's just a lot of breweries that shouldn't be open. I agree with you. You know, whether it be the business, how it's run, or the beers are just bad. And I hate saying anyone's beers are bad, but it is reality sometimes out there. Maybe just not in their wheelhouse as far as the brewer goes. I really do expect to see a downturn this coming year, if not the next coming 2 years. Because on top of that, people are moving away from beer as well. As we see with these younger generations, you know, they're going to these seltzers, these non-alcoholics, these RTDs. As the people who traditionally drink beer get older, you know, it's going to be fewer and fewer people patronizing these places.
Yeah, I'm actually looking and I could probably get a good. So when we first started the Michigan Brewery Map app, it was actually at the end of 2020 in obviously during the pandemic. And by the looks of it, I've got roughly 104 or so closures. Some of these are, they were on the way out prior. Some of these, like Arbor Brewing Company in Ann Arbor, that kind of closed right as the pandemic started. I have like on here Detroit City Distillery. They never got off the, like they never started. Same with like Motor City Harley Davidson over in Novi, Little Biscuit. So like some of those breweries are breweries that never actually opened. Some of them, like Saucy Brew Works, have closed. I'm trying to see what else. Big Red Farms. So yeah, so there's probably a good, I would say after all that, maybe like 80 breweries that have closed since we started tracking all this through the Michigan Brewery Map app. Which I mean is not a little.
So Arbor Brewing, they closed a location though. They didn't close the whole brewery.
Correct. Yes, they closed the downtown Ann Arbor Brew Pub closed, but Plymouth is still open and Corner is still open. Yeah, so there's a lot of them, like Motor City Brewing in Livernois that just closed earlier this year. I believe tonight's the last night for Ellison REO Town. We also had like the Raven Brewing closed, Osgood closed, Pointless over in Ann Arbor closed. So yeah, so there's a lot of breweries that have closed within the state for one reason or another. Final Gravity closed their Kalamazoo, Experimentation closed, both Elk Brewings closed, Eldebrow. We have lost a lot. A couple Jolly Pumpkin closed, according to Bats McGee, which I believe we have in here somewhere, but not necessarily well gone. Our friends at Lynchpin, like we lost Lynchpin. That was a great little spot over at the French Laundry in Fenton. So we are still adding breweries at a clip, but I think this is going to be the year where it starts to kind of slow down and you start seeing breweries that probably should have closed. That will probably run out of money that will no longer be with us.
The first wave of it was less closing and more of them being bought up, right? Like there was the big boys were running around buying up breweries left and right for a few years there. And that seems to have slowed down. Now they're being now left they're giving to them close back. And they're giving them back. Yeah.
Yeah. Michigan doesn't necessarily see that too often. Like our out of town buyers are, Canarchy, which bought Perrin, Atwater, which is bought by Miller, Bell's, which was bought by
Lion.
And then of course, Founders has been not craft beer since we started the show, basically. Like San Miguel already had an investment. So I don't think we see it too much here in Michigan. But I also don't think there's too many breweries that will be saved by some out of state purchaser. You know, we lost Mills production facility and sure Mills beer is back up where they're doing contract brewing of their styles and their brands. But we're not going to see Rochester Mills as big as it used to be. I think as a lot of breweries are starting to downsize too.
I do think still we're going to see.
Yeah. For them, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. The brew pub's owned by somebody else. So.
Oh, that's right. They just shared a few beers.
Yeah, they shared a few recipes, but the brew pub, along with Royal Oak Brewery and Detroit Beer Co., are all owned by the same entity. The production facility was owned by somebody else.
Gotcha.
I do think we're going to see a lot of our smaller breweries. And I say smaller because they're not smaller if you look at the rate that they've grown over the last few years, but you were going to see a lot of our breweries actually strengthen their ties in their community. And that is going to grow their sales. They may not be distributing across the state or out of state, but I think that they will be growing as a company though.
I'd love it if we were getting back to the old style of every neighborhood has their own brewery.
Yeah.
When we had ours in my neighborhood, I loved it. I loved going there. And the one that I currently go to that's feels like a neighborhood brewery, even though it's quite a hike to get up there. They're great people. I love talking to them. They love talking about beer. They make good beer. The crowd that comes in and out of there every day, they work and live in the area. So it's just it feels like a neighborhood brewery. It's great.
Yeah, I think you're going to see those stay open and be fine, like the breweries that are in like Hooko, which is in Ubly, Michigan, or Kickstand, which is in Commerce Township. Like, I think you're going to see a lot of these breweries be perfectly fine, even though they're not necessarily big breweries. But I feel like there's going to be a lot of breweries that are fighting against others, like breweries in Ann Arbor. We have Townies that it's up for sale right now. But whereas Wolverine State and Holmes are both doing well as Mothfire. So, are the breweries that are in downtown Ann Arbor going to be in any issues like, Grizzly Peak or Blue Tractor or Jolly Pumpkin, which was all the same company? I feel like you're going to see a lot of the issues with, breweries where there's, maybe two breweries in a single city. But I want to add one more layer to this, and I think you're going to see a lot of breweries get bought up by breweries with money.
AKA Kings and Convicts, what they were doing for a while.
I wouldn't say to that extent, because that's some big dollars that they're dropping over at Kings and Convicts. What I'm more saying is that, say, for instance, something happens to, let's say I'm looking at the list of breweries right over here. Something happens to Paddle Hard over in Grayling. That's going to be for the opportunity of, say, a brewery out in Traverse City, like a Right Brain, to open up Right Brain Grayling. Or, we see it with Eastern Market Brewing Company. We see it with Grand River Brewing, where they're kind of buying up where breweries were. Like, we don't know where the what happened with Fort Street. We don't know what happened with the location as well as the stuff, the equipment. But when you see like Brooks Brewing, I think finally sold in Ferndale. If it isn't selling, it is for sale.
But it's been there for a while.
It's been open for it still. Like, they haven't really closed it or anything like that.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But you're going up against Urban Rest Downtown and Urban Rest Regular. You're going up against Be Nectar, which is over there. You're going up against Downtown Ferndale in the first place, so going to all these other places, and there's going to be those cities, those areas where it's not enough for two breweries or three breweries, but there's not enough to bring people in to go to both breweries, as we saw with Pontiac with Experimentation and Fillmore 13, where Experimentation is no longer here. So I think we're going to see a big course correction. I think we're going to see a lot of breweries expanding a little bit more. Dark Horse comes to mind. I wouldn't say that they won't go out and buy maybe another brewery or two. Waffo over on our YouTube says, are breweries setting up an alternating proprietary agreement where they share the same space? We've talked about this. There's that spot in Chicago, which just the name is not coming to me this second, where they have a lot of like home brewers and brewers come in, and it's almost like not a ghost kitchen, but a revolving kitchen where there's a new chef, new menu, new everything. I think with what we have to offer within the Michigan, because Tecumseh's got a production facility, Brew Detroit's got a production facility, Dragon Mead's got enough space for production, Roke's got enough space for production, Dark Horse, that I think that is where you're going to see a lot of places go when they want to make beer, to where we might even get, like, remember when Lake Brothers existed in Michigan? That was just a contract brew out of Brew Detroit that was fully distroed. No venue, nothing. It's the same with Red Rocker right now.
So you think you'll see more of that? I think what
he's talking about, though, is like Broadleaf, where you've got Brewery Vivant, Broadleaf, and Black Calder out brewing out of the same space.
Maybe, maybe. Waffle would have to comment further within YouTube. I know we are... yeah, you just assuming that it's a he just because it's a craft beer world. We need more...
here come the ratings again. Here come the reviews.
But yeah, so I think there's going to be a big change within the industry next year. For those places that are looking to expand, you know, they might be able to utilize this contract brewing to be able to expand without necessarily overextending themselves. Like, I don't see Artisan Reserve anytime soon utilizing like a contract brewery, because they're just dealing with their one or three barrel system. But you might start seeing newer breweries that might want to get their name in before the brewery opens. Like a, I'm trying to think of what's upcoming. I did look at all the upcoming breweries that are getting here in Michigan. Like, so Happy's Taco Shop. They got a brewing license, but they're up in Traverse City. They're in Boyne City. So they could go get something from Petoskey or go get something from Ripe Brain, where they could get the beer made before they even open. That's the same with Stumblebum and Troy. Like, they could probably go contract out of Loaded Dice or go contract out of somewhere else and get the beer. Of course, our friend Joe Walters is opening up One for All in Livonia. So I think you can see that as a difference. But I still think we're going to see a lot more closures, and a lot more breweries kind of eating each other up within the industry to expand as long as they have money. As we finish this episode, the final episode of Better on Draft for the year, Waffo says, I am a guy, no worries. So Wendy, you're in the clear this time. Wendy had the right idea with the consolidation of breweries. So, I mean, I understand like Broadleaf, Vivant, and Calder obviously all brewing in the same spot. But I think it's going to be something along the lines of, you know, I hate to say it, but I don't know how Kunin over in, not Warren, but the other one, the Clinton Township one is still.
That one's still there.
Still there.
Wow.
And as new breweries get into that area, is it going to help them or is it going to hurt them with Tombstone, with Arctic Circle, Sherwood's still over there. I think there's one going into Harrison Township here soon. You know, are you going to have that like 5994 corridor, or is everyone just going to kind of go to their one spot that they want to go to? That's going to do it for Better on Draft, the episode 337. My name is Ken. If you are listening live, of course, we're going to be back in about 8 minutes, 8:23 p.m., to go over the craft beer news, the final time for the year. No matter what you think of your beer, we think it's Better on Draft. Have a good night.
Cheers.